Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I am with the guy who I'd like to actually refer to as the king of apps. He is the innovator and the guy that's been pushing forward for many, many years now, app-based magic worldwide. I'm extremely honored to have him on the channel. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Mark Kirstein. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm good. That's a very kind. Thank you. I'm very good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for coming on the channel. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know what? Everybody watching this has probably used at one point or another one of your apps. WikiTest, for example, over the last 18 months, I don't think I saw a virtual show that did not use WikiTest in it. Like every single virtual show I saw had WikiText in it at one point or another. I mean, especially now in the last 18 months, so many people are using the apps that you've created.
Must be great. Yeah, no, for sure. It was I didn't update WikiText to suddenly work on virtual shows, but it's obviously been a popular choice.
It really has. So many people are using it. And as I say, there's going to be people that are watching this that know all about your products. They use them on a regular basis. And I want to talk all about the different products that you've brought out and some of the newer things that you've brought out recently as well. But would you mind if we talk a little bit about your career and how you got into developing magic apps? Would that be okay?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right, because you openly say to people you're not a performer. You perform, but you're not a professional performer. That's not how you make a living. And yet you're still incredibly creative, and some of the stuff that you come out with is brilliant. So how did you get into magic? I mean, was there a period of time where you were kind of obsessed over magic and it was a hobby? What's your origin story is what I'm trying to say.
Sure. Yeah. So it's a very typical story, I'm sure, which is I had a Paul Daniels magic set when I was four, and I was watching Paul Daniels magic show. I kind of just on the edge of growing up in that era. Just kind of got the bug very early on, showed my friends at school, you know, little magic tricks and packet tricks and things like that I got when I was quite young, and discovered the Young Magicians Club when it first opened, which would have been when I was eight. You had to have been 12 to join, but I told my mom to lie about my age, which she kindly did. So I've had kind of all these things through my life to kind of keep me going, and just been always fascinated by it and interested in it. So magic's just always kind of been, like, as far as I can remember, I've done nothing else, and I've been interested in nothing else as much as magic. It's always been my main thing, that it's just always kind of been consistent since I was four.
And was there a period of time where you were thinking, you know what, I'm going to actually be a professional performer? I'm going to go out there and make a living doing magic.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So when I was a kid, I assumed that that's what I was going to do. I studied maths at university, and I've loved maths and learning maths and things like that. So I carried on with a traditional route simultaneously, but I think I kind of always had it in my head up to a point that magic is what I was going to do full time. I kind of never really, I just assumed it was going to be performing magic, because that's all I really knew that people could do when I was very young. It was only later on that I realized, when I started meeting some friends who were like consultants, that there are other careers and other things that you can do within the world of magic. And there's actually quite a lot. You know, I know people who are amazingly good at creating illusions or building like very particularly intricate gimmicks and stuff, and they're still magicians. So it was only later that I realized that would kind of open up. But at an early age, I definitely thought, I'll be a professional magician. And in fact, later on, you know, I got a job in banking for a few years out of university. And when I quit banking, it was because even at that point, I just kind of assumed maybe I'll go into performing magic and stuff, which I've kind of toyed with, but I think it's not really for me.
So what came first, Mark? Because obviously you are a consultant, you consult with a lot of people, a lot of big names. We'll talk about that in a bit. What came first? You as a consultant, or did you develop apps first to release to the Magic community? Which kind of came first?
It's kind of both kind of happened. I never realized when I made my first app, I never realized this was anything new or novel. And I'd made it just for myself. Like I'd made like a wiki test video was pretty much the first thing I'd made. And it was while I was still in banking and I was still very much a hobbyist magician. So I didn't know the magic world as well as someone who's, you know, lives and breathes it every day. I was just kind of floating around the edge every once in a while, checking in to see what new releases were around, if any. And so when I made wiki test, or at least the very beginnings of it, I didn't think I was doing anything novel. And I certainly didn't think that this would be a product to release or to sell. So that was kind of something I did. And before I'd released it, I started meeting a few people and getting a little bit more into magic, particularly as I was kind of gearing up to leave my job. So I'd kind of made stuff, but I hadn't released it. And then I started meeting people and consulting. I think probably the real answer is that I released some apps first before I did consulting, but it's always kind of been hand in hand. Because mm-hmm. the way I work is either I make stuff for people and that ends up being either on TV or in their projects, or if not, maybe I'll make stuff just for myself. Like to me, they're almost just one and the same. My development's the same, like if it's for me for sale or if it's for one particular person or project.
Okay. And you bring up Wikitest there. I mean, you say that was the very first app that you created, that you developed. For those people that are new to magic, because these days when you come into magic, apps are a thing. Like you come into magic as a new person and you see card magic, you see coin magic, app magic. It's an accepted thing. But when Wikitest came out, it was all very new. It was all very different. There were very few people doing anything with phones. I mean, smartphones are relatively new. And I remember back there, most of the apps that had come out were just like really visual stuff. It was like card in phone or like a really simple rising card where an image of a card would rise out the deck. I don't use this term lightly. Wikitest was a game changer because that was, at least as far as I'm aware, the first app where you were able to take control of a spectator's phone in a very natural, organic way. And that, at least in my mind, is the first thing that opened up the concept to, well, actually, this whole idea of having magic apps can be more than just a silly little image that's playing on your own phone, and it can be something that can be really powerful.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's totally right. My first experience of magic apps were things on your own phone as well, kind of a very similar thing. One of the best things that I saw, was one of my favorite apps at the time, was Angelo's Magic SMS, which was an incredible app. But always kind of on your own phone, it's always, you know, look at this and see this. And so it was, Wikitest drew inspiration from loads of different things. Like when I was young, I used to like I had a fake Hotmail website so that when all my friends were on MSN Messenger at the time, if you remember MSN Messenger, mm-hmm. And they all had kind of at hotmail.com addresses. So I'd send them a link that looked like it was hotmail.com, but actually it was it wasn't hotmail.com. And they would try and log in and I would get their passwords because I was that kind of teenager trying to prank my friends and not necessarily doing anything malicious, but I was just kind of like in this kind of weird, like part hacky world where you're just kind of putting pranks on friends and stuff. That was kind of that's what I was doing. And so it's only later on that I kind of realized that all this stuff has got like some magical application. So it wasn't born out of any other kind of magic products that existed at the time. But like I said, I didn't really realize that this was a novel thing. I just assumed that when I created it, I was so outside of the magic world, I didn't realize that this hadn't really been done before. So I think it was certainly different. It seems to be the way a lot of apps are now. I've got other apps which kind of borrow from similar principles, and it does seem to be if an app is all on your own phone, that does seem to be normally a thing that people don't prefer anymore, unless you've got a good reason to have it all on your own phone. If you're showing someone a list of items in your notes app or whatever it might be, or calling someone that you might have in your contacts, for example, there are good reasons for it. But there are, it certainly was quite a different product to what existed.
And Wikitest was the very first product that, I mean, you'd know better than me, WikiTest was the very first product that actually had that ability to sync two people's phones up, wasn't it?
There were a couple of other things around at the time that came out before WikiTest, but I am pretty confident I had WikiTest myself that I was showing people before anything was on the market that did that. Yeah.
Okay. And for somebody who wants to maybe develop their own app, maybe to use themselves or ultimately to sell to magicians, do you have any advice, I suppose, on what you need to know in order to develop an app, and also maybe talk about it from a creativity point of view as well? Because the creativity behind making a card trick is so much different than it is in terms of making an app, because there's so many more things that you need to know beyond just, okay, this would work as a trick, if that kind of makes sense. Do you have any advice for people that are watching this that would like to actually do their own thing?
Oh, sure. I mean, these days, I started this almost 10 years ago, and the way to develop apps then is a little bit different to how things are now. Every year, things get easier and easier. Well, two things happen. It becomes easier and easier to be a developer. The barrier to entry is a lot lower these days. But at the same time, the technologies get more and more complex. So if you think of an iPhone almost 10 years ago, it didn't have too many sensors and different ways of kind of being able to connect to it. If you just think about the features it might have had, it didn't have things to consider like light mode and dark mode. If you're trying to, you know, copy an app that exists on the phone, there were just so few things to consider. And especially if you're doing an app that's only on your own phone, you don't have to think about networking and how they're going to communicate and what am I going to do to this. So it was a very different landscape then, but at the same time, the barrier to entry is a lot easier. And so I recommend it. You learn a valuable skill if you learn how to develop. These days, I'd probably recommend people, if you want to make an iPhone app, look into Swift UI, which is some of Apple's latest UI frameworks, and use it with Swift. There are some people who prefer using web technologies, and if you make an app using web technologies, you might be able to make an Android and an iPhone app at the exact same time, so you don't have to build something twice if that's your intent. But these days, I don't know the exact resources, but if you look on YouTube even, all that kind of stuff is out there. The technologies that I've been using or started to using at least 10 years ago or so were much more complicated and clunky, and to develop stuff was harder. But yeah, if someone wants to make their own app rather than get a developer to do so, I don't think you'll actually find it that hard if you're considering it. I know there's been a bunch of people. There's a guy called Benjamin Budzak who made Thoughtcast, and he's got an app called, I guess it's wrong, but I think it's Calculon, and a bunch of other stuff, which over lockdown he taught himself, and he programmed this. He wanted to have this product on the market, and he literally sat down, developed it himself, and made an app and put it out there. So instead of getting a developer to do it, you know, it can be done.
That's amazing. And is there an app that you've seen that you've been like, oh wow, I wish I'd come up with that concept? That's, I suppose, what's the best Mark Kirstein app? What's the best non-Mark Kirstein app that you've ever seen?
There's a bunch. There's so many good apps out there that I love, and I don't know if I've ever kind of felt I wish I came up with that. For example, the Architect of Predictions is such a great app. If you have Tap, which is so good,
awesome.
And it's not even a complicated concept. It's a kind of quite a simple one. It does one thing, but it does it really well, and it's built perfectly. Like it's one of those things that you kind of sit down for a while, you understand, and learn how to use, and once you've got it, and you can let your mind run wild as you come up with, like, you know, maybe I want to do a lottery prediction, or I've got a gig for this particular client, maybe I want to do something, you know, holding a picture of their company headed paper or business card with my name on it or their name on it or whatever. You can really go to town. So I like apps when they're a bit more, they give you a little bit of leeway as to what you want to do, and my apps traditionally don't do much of that. So WikiTest is very much you're going to do the WikiTest trick, whereas things like DFB or Tap and things like that, I always quite enjoy, because you can really go to town and think of, you know, what's the effect you want to create here. They're more tools. Tap, I'd say, is probably one of my favorite products out there that's not mine.
Yeah, it's very, very good. And I suppose a question I'd love to ask, which has been asked for years when it comes to app-based magic, is why are there so many more apps on iOS than Android? You tend to see it all the time. Android users get really annoyed. When is this coming on Android? Why is this not coming on Android? And every time an app comes out, if it's iOS-based and only iOS-based, all the Android users get really, really annoyed. Can we put that to bed now and figure out why that is?
Yeah, I empathize, but the truth is really simple. I have an iPhone myself. And I really, it's cliche, but genuinely, I developed this stuff for me to perform. So because if I had an Android phone, I'd probably be making Android apps. But because I've got an iPhone, I make iPhone apps. There are a few more factors that kind of come into play. I'm a one-man band, and it's hard enough making these things just for iPhone, and to start developing them and supporting them and updating them for Android is just another headache. I know there's a lot of people who want this, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work already, and so to at least double my workload would be tough. And I know iPhones pretty well. I'd have to at least get to grips with the Android ecosystem very well. There's also loads of different screen sizes. If you look at the iPhone, you've got like the smaller phone, you've got the Pro, you've got the Max, you've got the Plus, the all Plus sizes with a home button, without a home button. There's so many things to consider already. And Android just is way more complicated than the iPhone ecosystem. So to put that in the mix would really be tricky. But the crux of it really is that I've got an iPhone and I make them, you know, for me. And it also allows me to not kind of make apps that adhere to the common denominator, just not make an app that kind of makes for a relatively okay iPhone app and a relatively okay Android app. I want to make really good iPhone apps. So if you have some of my apps, you might see that I kind of put attention onto things that even aren't important to magic, like your spectators will never see, and you rarely see, like the animations as you open up an app. You'll see like things fade in, and it just, I want them to feel like they're not just good magic apps, but they're good apps. And to do that on both iPhone and Android would mean that I wouldn't be able to sleep, I think. Yeah. So that's it, really. It's simple, really.
I totally get that. And after we've talked about Wikitest an awful lot, your follow-up, your next app was Earworm, was it, I believe. Now, did you feel, I mean, Wikitest became so huge, like everybody was doing it. It was like, you couldn't go to a gig still now, but especially when it first came out, it was like everybody was doing it everywhere. Did you feel any pressure on you thinking, oh my gosh, right, okay, this is a viable way for me to take my career? You know, I'm really not feeling the performing as much as I thought I was. This app has gone so well, I'm now working on my follow-on app. Oh my gosh, I hope it was there any pressure there? Or was it, you know, it's kind of like a band bringing out an album, then bringing up their follow-up album, or was it kind of like, no, this is a cool concept, I know this is going to be okay?
Yeah, it's a great question. And yeah, I think you've certainly, there's a bit of that for sure. I've certainly felt a bit of, even every day since. I mean, Wikitest is still probably what I'm most known for. So I'm always kind of feeling, a bit of, I can't help but naturally compare whatever else I do to Wikitest in some ways. But I try not to think about it like that. I just try and, you know, my favorite app right now is probably my latest app, just because, and that always seems to be the case, because I spend so much time working on it and thinking about it and, you know, trying to figure out how to make it work as best as it can and be the best that it can be, that I try and really just focus on what I'm doing, the latest app that I'm working on, more than just kind of saying, oh, I've got to make it like this and people really liked it, what can I do to emulate that? And there's a bit of that, I suppose, but yeah. If you're asking if I feel a bit of pressure, sure. Yeah, I wouldn't lie and say I don't, but yeah, I try not to focus on it.
And all of your apps have been very, very successful. There's not been something that you've brought out that people have gone, well, that sucked, you know, that's never happened, which is amazing. Because one thing that I've found, and I don't know if you probably noticed this more than me, because obviously you live, breathe and sleep apps, but what I've seen recently with magic apps is there's been some that have come out that are quite subpar. It's almost like, okay, there's this whole part of the industry where, you know, we can bring out a trick, it's all relatively unknown, let's bring out, and we're starting to see quite subpar apps or things that are very, very similar to something else. And obviously, because it's all so new, the ethics when it comes to magical app creation, it's kind of a gray area. Not so much with magic tricks, it's like, well, okay, that was based on that guy's trick, there's virtually no difference, you shouldn't have bought that out. Do you find that with the whole app type industry, there's a lot of gray area and there's a lot of uncertainty?
Oh, for sure, more than anything I've seen. And it's as you say, you know, it's so new that it just hasn't had the benefit of time for people to kind of sort out what they do, what they should and can't protect. So there's a school of thought that, you know, if I come up with a really good input method, which is kind of a modular part of an app, a bit of an app that you're going to use to queue in the information secretly, perhaps. And someone else uses that input method, but for a completely different trick. If they did do that, then have you got a right to be upset? Possibly. But the thing that I try and adhere to is I try to ask people. And like, with Streets, for example, Streets exists as a book test, you know, from John Archer, which is an incredible, incredible trick. And so I bought the rights from him, which I thought was the right thing to do, rather than just do the trick and just say, well, this is an app version. And so I find myself, I send emails all the time. I've been told no a lot, that I can't do things. So I just listen to that, because it's still a little bit of a Wild West. I just think it's important to get people's permission where possible. And if you think you're close. But there is also a part where people just don't think that they're necessarily close. It's tricky, and I don't really know what the answer is. But for sure, there are things where things are quite close, and maybe the person who's made a version of, well, one person might feel that, you know, this is incredibly close, and another person might feel actually this is worlds apart, it doesn't do the same. And you can really frame things either way to sound like you're the person in the right, but it's tough. And as time goes on and more people seem to like app magic, you know, early on, even when I released WikiTest, there's a lot of people who say I would never do a trick with my phone because it's just technology. And there's a lot of people who just didn't really believe in the world of app magic. But as more and more people do, and there are more and more people kind of rushing to develop apps and make apps, the problem seems to only be getting worse at the moment. But I still hope that it will settle down and people will just kind of understand the boundaries.
But from the outside looking in, the input method, it's kind of like, it wouldn't saying, oh, I can't copy that because of that input method. I can't use that input method. That's like saying, I can't use a double lift in my trick. Like, you talked about Angelo's wonderful magic episode, which I did for years. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, the input method, without giving anything away, the input method for that is the same as tap. But yes, they're two completely different things. If we went along that concept, tap could never be released because that input method's been used in a trick from years ago, but that input method allows you to do something completely different. So surely it should be taken on a case-by-case basis and look at what the end result is, as opposed to going, well, you can't use this input method. Well, you can't use a double lift in your card trick.
For sure, for sure. I think the problems are, I completely agree. I think if you look at them as a case-by-case basis and say, okay, what is the structure of my trick and what is the structure of your trick? Or, you know, what are the things that I've developed for this? Is it, I've developed, you know, this features feature A, B, C, D, and E. Mine also features A, B, C. Like there are some things where, okay, I've got this input method, you've got this input method. I think in the case of Tap and Magic SMS, Tap was originally an app, I think it's like an updated version of Photo Prediction from the same developer, Guy Del Freight. And he, I believe, asked Andrew for permission, and Andrew said yes. Had he said no, would he have still done it? I don't know. But I agree with you. It would have been a shame for that not to exist. The difference I only see with the double lift, I agree with the point completely, but the only difference with the double lift is, and it's not to say that the double lift is not obviously a genius, great thing, but the similarity of the building block makes sense. But to come up with an input method, you know, I've got a few input methods that I feel like I've brought to the table. It's not just coming up with it, but then the work on like the nuances and the how to do it and how to make it, there's a lot more involved. I've got a particular input method for Earworm, which I didn't come up with the concept of. I got permission to use the concept that it works called, I call it the web search input method, but it's had different names in different applications. But there are some ways there's a couple of nuances as to how I've implemented it, such as the thing that you actually do to submit the text. Like, and I, this was, it's, it solved a problem that I had for a while, which is I wanted to do Earworm without having an accomplice, and I wanted to do it in a justified manner. And one thing I always keep coming back to with that magic is justification. You really need to justify, you know, I don't want to do a trick where just randomly halfway through the trick, I pick up my phone, I do something and put my phone away. Because you'll just say, well, you just did it at that point there. I need to have some kind of reason and justification as to why am I picking up my phone and why am I doing something. And I really like ways where I can openly do something. There might be some satisfaction of having like a secret earpiece listening to me and doing some kind of voice recognition and things like that. And you feel like Q or, you know, James Bond or something. But there's also amazing satisfaction of doing something openly. If I picked up my phone in front of you and say, you know, actually, let's just check something. I just did this. Look, millions or something like that. I put my phone away. You can't accuse me of doing anything. You know, if you catch a glimpse or get a feeling that I've done something, You're not going to think it was at the point where I was openly apparently showing you and being so fair. And so there are a couple of bits of satisfaction that it's a tough one because the building blocks are so much more intricate than a top change or a double lift. I know people who are amazing at a double lift and have incredible touches and things like that, but in terms of the creation of these building blocks, I understand why people sometimes feel a little bit annoyed. So Andrew's thing was incredibly novel at the time. His input method that he uses for Magic SMS was incredibly novel. I totally agree. I think it would have been a shame for that not to have existed for other apps. But if Andrew would have said no, I think probably for a while it would have been his right. But this is why it's hard to say. You know.
But then it's not just the input method, it's every single aspect, isn't it? So for example, my friend Lloyd Barnes, who I know that you know, he obviously created, which one was it? With the iPhone timer to do the any card at any number. I can't remember.
The Tempus.
Tempus. He created Tempus. But then off the back of that, we have ACAT, which is also a card at any number, but it does it in a different way, but it's still using the iPhone timer. But it's doing it in a different way. Now, is that okay? You know, you've got somebody who's created an any card at any number using an iPhone timer. And then you have a completely different trick, but it's still an any card at any number, still using a memorized deck, still using an iPhone timer, but the method is different. And you can kind of say, when it's not at Magic, you can go, well, that's a triumph routine.
Yes.
This is a triumph routine, but because the shuffling sequence is different, although they both achieve the same effect, it's different enough. How do you decide that when it comes to that?
You know, one of the concepts that I thought about a long time ago, and I know that Greg Rostami, we spoke about this once. Me and Greg have had our differences in the past, but we still amicably talk and try and solve this because it is a problem. It's an industry problem. And it's to the detriment of magicians, because magicians might want to buy something. And if TAP didn't have its input method, maybe they would have replaced it and had something else that would have been equally good, but maybe it just wouldn't exist. So it is a problem, not just for developers, but it's a problem for the industry because they might either not get a product or get a very different product or a compromised product. There are a few ways around it, I think, that I can potentially think. None of them have really been done yet. One way to consider an effect being different, I suppose, is firstly to try and figure out the definition of what that means. And some definitions are, if you've got a trick, it might have an effect, a method, and a premise. And if you change at least two of those three, it might be okay. That works well, but in the case of app magic, there's so many intricate parts and so many moving things. Someone might be protective of a input method, for example, which doesn't really, it doesn't matter. The effect might be completely different, but the input method might be the same. And another way of defining it is, if I did trick number one, so for example, if I did Tempus, could I then go on and perform the any card at any time thing immediately after? And some magicians might say, well, no, it's almost pretty much the same thing. And even though it's a very different product in most ways, other than its premise, you might not want to do it. And so for that reason, maybe it is too similar. I don't know. But one of the ways to kind of solve it that came out of a discussion with me and Greg once was modularizing apps. So for example, if I've got a really good input method, maybe it's worth me releasing an app that just does that input method, nothing else. And then if you want to use that input method, in your app, you develop your app that can receive input from my app. Mm. So in performance, I would, show you, I would say, blah, 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 and I would use this input method, maybe some kind of number input or something. And this input method has got all the settings, all the features you need to make it look like it needs to look and do what it needs to do. And it can just send that off to whatever you need it to send it off to. And then it's up to another app developer who doesn't even have a good idea for an input method for their app. But the benefit to them is great because they get, maybe there are 10 input method apps out there that are really good, and all of those they can use without problems. And people have already paid for the input method apps, so that developer's got their money. They don't have to form a deal with these people. They don't necessarily maybe not need to ask permission, but they can just use them because that developer's happy. They'll be happy because they get to use it, and they can just focus on developing their reveal parts of their app, while the developer of the input method can focus on all the intricate things that you need to make that thing look good as well. There are some technical limitations of this kind of thing, but I think that could be a nice solution for the world where everyone wins and the consumer wins as well, because you get a choice. You're going to go, okay, I'm going to perform this input method with this reveal, and, you know, make an effect of my own in that way. So maybe that's a solution, but we haven't really seen that kind of thing yet.
Well, that reminds me of something that David Penn did recently with his Pi Revelations. And I think it was one of the most genius ideas from a marketing point of view you could ever do. He had this trick that relied on an app. And then he said to all developers, hey, here's how you link my trick into your app. Please take it and you can use it for free. Well, that's such a great idea because now the users of these apps are like, oh, I can do this. I'll have to buy David's trick. I mean, that was a very clever idea, really, when you think about it.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And that being kind of like part of the digital and part of the real world makes complete sense because you can use it in that way. But yeah, I think there'll definitely be something great if there's this kind of full immersion of input and revelation, assuming that that's the kind of trick you want to do. I think that's kind of quite a good solution.
I suppose part of the problem with all of this ethics discussion that we're having right now is there's very few people that really understand the app market. I mean, they understand it on a superficial level, like this app does this, this app does this, this app does this. But in the normal magic industry, you're very quick for somebody to jump on and go, hang on, that is a complete copy of this trick that came out. And how many tricks get pulled off the market because of that? I see it happening all of the time. But people don't know what's happening behind the scenes with an app. I mean, as an end user, I can buy an app and I wouldn't know if it's a copy of somebody else's because it might. Do you know what I mean? It's very difficult for the magic police to kind of police something because nobody really knows what's happening nobody really knows what's happening from a copying point of view behind the scenes.
For sure, you've got to be paying attention. And for me, it's really easy because I, you know, live and breathe this stuff for sure. But yeah, you've got to be paying attention to understand. And it's also hard to police. Sometimes it's hard to identify them. And apps tend not to just do one thing these days. They tend to have a bunch of things. And so it's hard to kind of say, no, this and this are from this person, but this and this are yours, but these couple of things are from him. And it then kind of ends up being, it's tedious for sure. Mm. Unlike a card trick, for example, where it's like, here's the trick and here's the method and the effect, which, you know, has its problems of its own, but it's easy to see, maybe even from the effect copy, you know, from seeing the actual description on the magic site, what it might be, and say, hang on a second, this reads similar to this other trick. That's not always the case. Obviously those cases can be pretty complex as well, but yeah, I mean, also you have to pay for the app to know that it's what it's really going to do and what it's going to be. Mm. Yeah, it's hard.
Well, let me ask you one other thing. You mentioned earlier on that one of the issues that people had with app-based magic in the early days was, I wouldn't use a phone to do magic tricks because they'll know it's to do with the phone. You don't get that these days because apps are so clever. You can do something and you don't even realize a phone's in play. But one of the big negatives that I'm seeing these days, because obviously with the review show, I see so many comments of what people think, and I do review apps quite a lot. One negative that people bring up over and over again, especially in the last 6 months, is why should I spend £60 on an app when at some point the developer might withdraw support from it and I can't use it again? And I think that came to the forefront when Illusionist decided to stop supporting Cypher and Tempus, which people paid a lot of money on for, and they just said, well, you know, guys, we're not supporting it. Because obviously, unlike a magic trick, I could market this deck of cards, and when somebody buys it, this deck of cards, as long as they don't throw them away, they're always going to be there and people are always going to be able to use them. If I buy an app and the app developer drops dead tomorrow, worst case scenario, and they're not there to develop the app that they've created, nobody else can develop it other than them, you're kind of screwed. You know, you're in a situation where you, especially if you've built a career around this. I remember way back in the day, there was that app that sent an email to somebody, and there was a prediction already in there. And
Email Wizard.
I never had it, but I had a lot of friends that did. And I had one friend in particular who built it into his entire act. And then he had to stop doing it because the rights got sold to Copperfield. And then all of a sudden he couldn't do it. And all of his marketing and everything was based around this trick that he bought. And for no reason of his own, he could no longer do.
Yeah.
that's like people's biggest problem, especially now with illusionists, but it's always been kind of an issue there.
Yeah.
Talk about that.
I think you've identified both sides of the argument very well. And I see both sides completely, which is you're right. If I went ahead and I bought a magic trick, I own that magic trick and I don't have to carry on paying for it. And that's mine. And if, you know, no one can take that away from me. Well, hopefully no one can take that away from me. Whereas apps are a little bit different. Especially these days. Back in the day, you know, if it was magic SMS, that doesn't need any network capabilities and things like that, or any kind of app that's just on your own phone, there are fewer moving parts, but it's still a problem. By default, if you did no update, if you had an app and you did nothing to it, it would eventually stop working. It's just a nature of the way the world works at the moment.
That's like what happened iPhones, with SMS. I used right. to do it and I can't anymore. It's impossible.
Right. So by default, with no love and no care, apps will start working. And that's not a magic app problem. That's just an app thing. So I totally understand magic app developers who might want to charge again or charge more money and things like this. Like on the magic app developer side, it's you've paid me once and now I've got a lifetime worth of work to keep this thing going. It might not be every day, but you know, certainly maybe every year or every new iPhone that comes out, particularly for apps which look a bit like maybe the calculator or are copying certain apps in the iOS. When those change, you know, you probably have to put the work in and do things, and people expect that. So I understand on the magic app developer side, it's a lot of work even though you've been paid once, which is tedious, and that doesn't exist with a card trick. With a card trick, you don't, you know, you put out the card trick, you don't have to then say, you know, everyone send me addresses, I'm going to send you the latest version of the card trick every year for no extra charge. Like that's not how magic works normally, or any product works. But I also understand the consumer side. You pay for something and you expect it to work and you expect it to stay working and you expect it to carry on working and not change and not suddenly stop working when you go ahead and try and use it, and not be bought by a famous magician and be told that you're not allowed to use it anymore and it's not going to work and stuff like that. So there are these two opposing sides, and I understand them both. And I don't really know what a great answer is. The only thing that I know people have kind of toyed with is the idea of subscriptions. And again, this is not in a magic app world, this is just an app world. More and more apps and services, because these things are essentially services in some ways, are turning to a subscription model. And I don't know if the magic community are kind of ready to pay for things on a monthly or yearly basis, or if they would be keen to. There are a few things that, like, you know, there are a few services that claim to be the Netflix of magic, and those seem to be doing okay, I think. But maybe that's a solution. Maybe, you know, consumers would be happy, you know, if you're buying a magic trick and you're told, okay, it's just, you know, a couple of dollars a month or a couple of pounds a month or whatever, and it's kind of works out the same, you know, at the end of a year, as if you've bought the app, but you obviously have to do it every year. It's understandable to you that if you stop paying, it's you're not going to have access to the products anymore. And also the developers are going to be happy because they're going to get money every year. But there's also some kind of impetus on the developer to keep it updated. If you were paying monthly for something or yearly for something, and then 3 years down the line, it would just look terrible and it wasn't working anymore. You'd be very reasonable to be upset about that. There are some downsides to this model, which is, you know, if you magic apps tend not to be £3 or £4, they tend to be, you know, £60-70 plus. And so if you're paying, let's say, £4 or £5 a month for an app or something, it's hard to get that pricing right. I assume it would be around that level. But then you're going to have people just, you know, one of the good things about magic apps being quite expensive is that if I went to a wedding and I showed people Wikitest, if that person happened to really go on a big Google search and find out the name of the trick and find out what it was and go ahead and want to try it, one of the turnoffs for that is that the app is £70 or £80, whatever it is. But if it was £5 a month, they could just pay for it for a month, learn how it works, and then not pay for it anymore. So you've kind of got there's still a few problems with that model. But I see both sides, and it's tough. But for me personally, I love updating my apps because I want, cliche as I said it before, I want it to work for me. And so I always try and keep things updated and working as much as I can. So Wikitest, which has been out since 2016 now, still works on the latest iOS. If you paid for it that once, you've still got all the same features that you would have had in 2016 and more, and it would look correct, you know, even though iOS has changed. The calculator doesn't look the same as it did in 2016. A whole bunch of stuff has been updated, and people wouldn't have to pay anymore. I've got an app called Diverter, which I put out for $4. And if you would have paid those $4, you would have it today with all its new features and all of its new capabilities and all its new stuff, and not a penny more. And it still looks correct for the latest iOS and everything like that. So yeah, I still put the work in, but I think I understand developers who don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, though. You're a good guy, and you've got a great reputation when it comes to app development, which is why when people buy your stuff, they can be safe in the knowledge, because you've got this track record, that there's nothing that's going to happen to it that's going to stop people from being able to use it. But you have a new creator that we've never heard of before. Perfect example is something that everyone's talking about at the moment, this Instaprime thing. I don't know the people that have created that. I mean, it looks good. I haven't seen it myself yet. It looks like a really good idea, but when you don't know who the developers are and they've got no track record, it kind of makes you think, oh, well, I really hope that this is actually going to be there, because when you buy something and you put a lot of time and effort into it and it becomes part of your act, if that suddenly goes away, it becomes a bit of a problem.
Oh, for sure. I don't have that one in question, but it's hard to sometimes see people's track record. I know Josh, who developed it, is a really talented developer, so I would have at least every hope that it works and it works well. But in terms of the longevity of this stuff, it's hard to tell. It's obviously a bit of a punt. Unless you're on a subscription model, and at least you know that, you know, okay, this is not getting updated, I'm going to cancel my subscription until it carries on. Other than just looking at someone's track record, I don't know what other metrics we can choose.
Well, here's a question for you. What do you think the next big thing in app magic? Because obviously when the first thing was just the fact that there's an app on a smartphone that was able to do something clever, and then I think the next thing was probably Angelo's thing, because it allowed a very clever input method. Then I think it was probably Wikitest, because that allowed you to have that concept of pairing two phones, which was revolutionary. The only other thing, and people have been coasting along on that concept for a long time, it's been variations on that, to be perfectly honest. I think Theory 11 obviously had Cyber, which had I don't want to give anything away, obviously, but it had another concept which added a different layer that allowed you to have something extra but be able to do stuff in a very different way without trying to give anything away of what Cyber is.
Sure.
What do you think? And that hasn't really been explored that much, what Theory 11 came up with Cyber. Do you think that that's the thing that people are going to be pushing forward, or is there a new thing? Are we waiting for this new concept that everyone's going to pull a wiki test and just basically take that concept and just run with it in a different direction?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I don't know the answer. I suppose if we think about Cyber, the thing which that's born out of is a technical thing that wasn't invented by them, but they're using. For magic, essentially. And so you can kind of foresee a world where the biggest magical innovations are driven by, well, what technology is now available to us. If every phone has got a certain thing built into it that we can use and exploit and, you know, and use for a magic trick, then maybe that will become the next thing. It's hard to predict. In Wikitest, I added a feature a few years ago now that let you, I won't be too verbose, but let you do a thing where you can have the spectator promise that they didn't even search for something, and you're still able to tell them what it is they were thinking of, in a way. So it's not word on the page. Nothing you say. You were thinking about searching for this, but you didn't even search for it. Is a sentence you can say, and they go, "That's correct." And so to everyone else, it looks like pure mind reading. And I was really proud of coming up with this feature, this particular thing for it, which I've used as well in my latest app, Streets Pro. But it's always hard to predict what would take off and what won't. I think because that wasn't built into one trick that then came out with this feature being its kind of flagship feature, it's easy for it to kind of just kind of go less noticed and not be like a big kind of game-changing thing. But I suppose it just depends on what people value. Your example with Cyber is great, but it's, yeah, I just don't know what technologies around the corner that would make things more useful to magicians, and maybe the answer is based on that.
Okay, that's interesting. Now I want to ask you one other question. Obviously, in the last couple of years, I can't remember even the name of it. The iPhone allows you to do if, what, when. What's it called?
If this, then that. Shortcuts, maybe.
Shortcuts, there you go, thank you.
Shortcuts.
Now, am I right in saying that you wrote an ebook on shortcuts?
I did. It's not on sale anymore, but I wrote it a couple of years ago, yeah, when it first came out. Yeah.
I mean, is that a concept that normal people that don't understand how to develop apps, is that something that they can explore? Is there legs in doing that in terms of using shortcuts to develop your own concepts within Magic? Because I've played around with shortcuts in a few different ways, and they are very intuitive. Do you think that's something that people could... So I read your ebook, and some of the ideas that you had in there were absolutely fantastic.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, for sure. There's no replacement, I think, for making a Magic app or having an app which does some stuff on the phone, you know, taking up the full screen. But likewise, there are some things that apps can't do that shortcuts can. If you wanted to send a message to someone without any user interaction, so based on a certain, maybe at exactly 10:30 p.m., I wanted my phone to send a message to Craig saying, "Hi, Craig," without me doing anything. You can't do that with an app. You can, but not an iMessage on your phone. Whereas shortcuts, you can. There are certain things that you can do with shortcuts that you can't, that apps won't let you do. So I think there'll certainly be more Magic apps that use shortcuts, or Magic tricks that use shortcuts on your phone, that we just haven't seen or thought about yet. There are so many things that you can do that haven't been explored. If someone's willing to, you know, if you ever look through and see what you can and can't do in shortcuts, I mean, anyone can just download the app, and I think it comes now pre-installed on your phone, but you can certainly have a play with the app and come up with things which are really cool. My PDF was partly, here's a bunch of tricks you can do, and also partly, you know, just kind of a PSA to magicians to check out the app and have a little look around, and here's how you make things, and here's a bunch of examples of things you can do. So you can play with having Siri say particular things to you. You can have your phone call people on command. You can have it do so many things, even, you know, change text on web pages and do whole, you know, manner of things that are actually pretty cool. So I think we haven't seen the end of shortcut tricks. I think there'll be loads more that are really good.
I mean, I think that they can also, it can tie into existing apps. So one thing that I've done with a shortcut, which is my favorite thing to use it for, and we talked about Tap, I've set a shortcut up so that when I close Tap down, which happens automatically when I do the thing, my phone automatically takes the last photo in my photo album and posts it to my Instagram stories. So now the spectator can go on their phone and they can look at my Instagram stories and they can see the prediction that, which, you know, is just kind of using that whole concept of shortcuts and just being able to take something and go, well, how else can you do this?
Amazing. Yeah, for sure. And even outside of Magic apps, it's such a useful tool that I think it's one of those. I think Magic tends to work best when it's kind of using things that not most people know about, and you're using it in a way that they wouldn't necessarily know you could use it either. So, and I think that's very much the case with Wikitesting, a lot of Magic apps that I think people would realize that, oh, this, you know, there's a few features in there that people don't necessarily know exist in a technical sense. And shortcuts is exactly the same. There's so many interesting things. And if you're just using your phone, I mean, I don't know if it tells me how many I have, but I've got a lot of shortcuts. I wonder if I can, like, this is my shortcuts app where I use shortcuts all the time, and I have loads and loads and loads of them. I'm sure people have got loads more, but that's a whole bunch of shortcuts. I use quite a few on a daily basis just to automate things and make things a little bit faster. If I wanted to do something, there was a world once where I'm on my phone, but there's something that I know I'd want to be back at my Mac to do, and these days I can, you know, just write a shortcut, and 9 times out of 10 I can probably use my phone for it. So it's a really powerful app. It's coming to the Mac soon. By the end of this year, it'll be on the Mac as well. So it might be easier to, if you want to make something, you can make it on your Mac and it will work on your phone. So I'm sure we'll see a big explosion of Magic products that use shortcuts in one way or another, for sure.
Fantastic. I want to just swing back and talk about you as a consultant a little bit more, because we've done a very deep dive into apps. But obviously, you spend a lot of time consulting with people. And I really need to bring up, I don't know if you've signed NDAs or you're not allowed to talk about it, but obviously, you work quite closely with David Blaine, which is fantastic. I mean, you know, somebody who is probably responsible for more magicians getting into Magic over that period of time than anyone. You know, the amount of people I speak to and I interview on this channel going, oh, yeah, I got into Magic because I saw David Blaine on TV. Like, right. Can you talk about how that came about? Like how somebody who's, you know, oh, you just said working in banking, quit, wrote an app, and now you're working with probably the biggest name in the world when it comes to magic. That's, where did that come about?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So it's, I think Luke Jermay was one person who said it once, which is that every magician is probably about one phone call away from someone else. So you know, we're all like, me and Blaine have had like a bunch of mutual friends, as I'm sure anyone who's in magic would probably have with almost anyone. So I think it's all kind of connected to the fact that I've started working on magic apps and making things with phones, particularly at a time that it hadn't really necessarily, I mean, I wouldn't say it's exploded, but there weren't as many magic apps on phones as there are today. So it was more novel than it still is. Meant that, yeah, just at one point, I think he was working on a new special and kind of wanted to meet people. This was, this was about almost 8-9 years ago or so now. So, I had a message. He was with a mutual friend, happened to be in London, asked if I wanted to meet up, and we met up and we got talking, showed him some stuff, and asked if I wanted to work for him. And so the next year or so, a couple of years later, I was in New York with him and working on his TV special at the time. And it was great. Like my first love is magic. So more than magic and magic apps and technology and stuff. So it was great to kind of just be working on everything. It wasn't just working on magic apps. Me and there was a point where it was me, him, and a bunch of other magic consultants sitting in rooms together, and sometimes just me and him, and coming up with card tricks and loads of different stuff and figuring out methods for everything and anything. And my role would be, you know, just a magic consultant in general, but then obviously if there's anything technical or using phones or anything digital that kind of we would be talking about would then kind of naturally fall down to me. So it's great. And so lucky enough to work with him on that special at the time, and then the next one as well, and a bunch of stuff since. But I really enjoy it.
As a consultant, obviously, it's not just David Blaine you've worked for. You've worked for so many other people as well. And part of your job is obviously to go in there and create magic for that person, for the use in the show or whatever it is that you're doing. Do you find it pressure-y? Because obviously when you're creating magic for yourself, for you to perform yourself or for you to release, you have all the time in the world. Like, I'm sure you've been working on streets for a long time before it eventually came out. But you might be in a situation where you have a certain amount of expectation. I've been brought into this as a consultant. It's my job to create magic. Oh my God. Is that a stressful kind of situation to find yourself in? Or as somebody who's done this all the time, does it almost feel kind of second nature now? Like, okay, this is what I've got to do. This is what I do. I'm good at it.
Yeah. I think for me, I'm probably called in under a few different scenarios. So for some things I've been called in on, it would be because they've already got the idea for a trick and they just want to see, can this be done? And so it's initially at least my expertise as to whether or not this is possible or if I can come up with any methods as to do this. And that would likely be a tech trick because, you know, I'm probably quite well versed in that, certainly more than building flaps or building anything. You know, I don't think anyone would call me about that kind of stuff. So they might have an idea for a trick. Oh, we want to do this trick using Facebook, for example, and can we do it? And so I would maybe propose a few methods and say, oh, you probably could if you're doing this, and maybe think about it for a while, and then eventually maybe start working on a prototype or something and then work on that particular trick. So in those cases, it's not incredibly stressful because it's not a empty page that I'm kind of coming up with ideas for and having to use the benefit of time to, you know, figure out loads of ideas for a particular project. But then the other way around, I suppose, I mean, everything's got its stresses and its, you know, maybe time dependence and stuff. But I've certainly worked on things where we've got a blank page and we need to think of a bunch of tricks. I'm certainly at a point where I've got a whole bunch of apps and things that I've started on but haven't finished. And honestly, I've also got a bunch of stuff which probably wouldn't be very good apps if I sold them, but they might actually be really good for TV. So I can maybe hit the ground running if there's no, we've got an idea of this kind of trick, can it be done? And more, what can we do? Then I've got a bunch of things that maybe I can propose and say, you know, how about this? Have you considered this? So So yeah, at that point, it's not too stressful. I don't feel too much pressure to kind of come up with stuff. And I think, I suppose I'm lucky in that sense that there's not too many magicians who also develop apps and work with phones and stuff in that kind of way. So I don't feel like I'm competing necessarily or kind of having to, I don't feel pressure to kind of come up with stuff because I suppose whatever my process is the process in some way. But yeah, there's still pressures on like, oh, we need this thing working by tomorrow, or why is it broken, or why is it not working? And but I think that's just normal with every industry.
Mm, absolutely. And I'll ask you the same question that I asked for Blake Voigt, because he is obviously a consultant as well. If you were working on a person's project, whatever it may be, and you came up with a revolutionary new thing that would set the app world on fire, would you be allowed to then bring that concept into something else that you're doing? Or is it a case of you've been paid as a consultant that has to lie specifically with that thing that you've created for that person and you can't go anywhere near it?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's I suppose if it's on their time and they're paying me to come up with stuff and I've been influenced by the stuff that we're kind of doing on a day-to-day basis, it's probably for them, but it might be a conversation. It might be something where we kind of go, okay, you know, this was made, but maybe you're not going to use it, or you are going to use it, or what's the process afterwards to release it? Like, if I wanted to, would you be comfortable with that? I suppose it would then just kind of turn into a conversation. But if it was something that I had, Wikitest is something I'd had before I'd done any consulting work. So if it was something that I've had, and then, you know, I say, as long as I make my terms clear, and maybe the performer and the company are under no false illusion that this is going to be something that's exclusive, then I suppose that's kind of okay. But I think it's one of those things that's like kind of a bit case by case, just kind of as long as there's some clarity as to what's going on. There are certainly some things where it's tough. It's not strictly a question you asked, but if I'm working on a particular thing and then someone else asks me, oh, Mark, have you considered this thing? And I'm maybe under an NDA or something with a certain TV show or something. And I then can't tell this person, oh, I considered it, but I'm working on it because this is an NDA. But then likewise, I can't not say it, because if I don't say it, it's going to look like I've taken the idea and I've run to the TV show and put it out, and then this person will get annoyed. So there are certainly awkward things that kind of happen in that world that are difficult to navigate. But as long as you're kind of honest and people, you know, like trustworthy, then normally those things kind of seem to work out okay.
Fantastic. Now that's really good. And I want to ask you one more question, which is, what's next? I mean, in several different ways, in terms of, is there anything on your magical bucket list that you'd like to achieve, either as a consultant or a magician or a creator, that you haven't done yet? Are there any future products that now you've got streets, that's in the bag, that's done? Is there anything else that you're currently working on? Or, you know, are there any goals or aspirations that you want to hit in the industry that you haven't actually, because you've had an amazing career? I mean, you are the guy. When everybody thinks of apps, the first person that comes to mind is you, which is an incredible situation to be in and shows how much respect people have for you, which is why you've consulted with some of the biggest names in magic. And your apps are some of the most popular apps ever released worldwide. I mean, you've done so much. So what's next?
Oh, well, thank you. That's very sweet. I don't know. I've never really thought of things as, you know, what am I going to do next and trying to plan it. I work on stuff all the time, and either it turns into something that I think could be really good to release, or maybe for one particular person. And then I just try and figure out, you know, what am I going to do with it? As you said, you know, streets, actually, I look back through some of my code, and I've certainly been working on it in some form or another for a very, very long time, having discussed it with John Archer years and years and years ago. So often I just kind of start working on something that I've been working on for a while and carry on with it. Maybe now is a good time to kind of readdress and relook at this thing. I don't know. I think there are more hardware devices now that magicians like to use. Because apps are becoming more popular, people also like to have other products that make their apps easier to use and easier to get information from. So I've started integrating some of my products with more hardware products that you can secretly use in a performance to see the information on, rather than look at the phone or look at your watch or something. So there'll probably be a bit more of that. I like to play around with those, and I think there's some really smart integrations there. I think there's some good software integrations with my Streets Pro. I recently did an update that makes it work with my Earworm app, similar in a way to how I mentioned before, where like one becomes the input and one becomes the output kind of in a certain way. So rather than reinvent the wheel multiple times, I think there'll be more integrations. I think I'm going to be working on those kind of things for a little while longer. But in terms of the next product, I'm not too sure. And I don't know if the next thing would be in the form of an app either. I worked on the video chat magic project during the lockdown last year. And came up with my friend Seth Raphael, we came up with Magic Mask, which has been a relatively popular thing that a lot of people have been using on Zoom shows. And that wasn't an app, but it was nice to kind of have a product out there that's still technical in nature, but wasn't an app product. So there might be more things like that. I really enjoyed working on those kind of things. But yeah, I've got a bunch of stuff that I'm working on. I just probably depends whichever one makes it first out and whichever one I really dive in on and finally get to completion.
Do you think virtual shows are here to stay? Do you reckon? Because obviously they become so popular over the last 18 months and that they're dropping away now, obviously, as live entertainment comes back. But I mean, do you think that that's going to be a viable option that, you know, companies now know, well, you know, we don't have to fly 5,000 people into a venue and pay a fortune for it. We can fly 200 and do a hybrid event and have everyone else log in remotely. Do you think that there's still going to be call for... because over the last year, there are so many products that have come out specific for virtual shows. So many. And yours was fantastic. It really was. Do you think that there's still going to be a demand for tricks that work in a virtual audience? Do you reckon that's still going to be here?
Yeah, it's hard for me to say, because as I don't perform that much, it's hard for me to kind of see the trends. But in terms of selling products, people I think seem to still like the idea that you can do something remotely, and the benefit of doing something remotely, even in person, for example with Streets Pro, is that even if you're in person but you're not too comfortable about touching their phone and doing something normally, it means if you can do something remotely, it also normally means that you can do it in person but contact free, so you can do it distanced in person at the same time. And so the benefit of having a trick which you can do remotely is still useful when things are going to become less remote. So as a creator, I suppose there's certainly I've got some drive to still make things which are able to be performed remotely, even if you're doing them in person. But where is the demand for Zoom shows going up or down? I really don't know. I know that some companies now are kind of saying to their staff, you know, you have to start coming back into the office for at least X number of days a week. It certainly seems that that's the trend. Who's to say what happens with the virus and stuff, but with vaccines and stuff, you know, hopefully things are on the way back. And whether or not Zoom shows are here to stay is, I guess, hard to say. I'm sure they'll always be around in some form or another. But the great thing about magicians is we're adaptive. And so it was great to see all performers suddenly jump onto the Zoom shows, and rather than just sit around and go, oh, I've got no gig, so that's the end of me. It's everyone's just going, nope, we're going to jump on the new medium and figure this out and do a good job. So if there's still a demand for them, I imagine magicians will still be doing them. So they'll probably stick around, I guess, in one form or another. Whether or not there'll be as many, who knows? But I reckon they'll still be around.
Absolutely. And I want to ask you one final question, which is probably the biggie. The question I get asked an awful lot on this channel is creativity, because I think people want to become creators. When you come into magic, creators are put upon a pedestal, aren't they? This guy's released this trick. This guy's released this trick. And I think a lot of people want to actually be creators. Now, as somebody who's created some incredibly well-known effects, but also spent many years working as a consultant, going in and specifically creating magic for a particular person or show, whatever it may be. Do you have any advice on the creative process, how people can be more creative, create magic, maybe to sell, but not necessarily, maybe just for their own act? And more specifically, as well as how to be more creative, how to find inspiration, because having spoken to so many magicians on this channel, the big problem that a lot of people have is finding that initial spark and that inspiration.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think almost all creativity is inspiration dependent. A friend of mine, Stephen Long, once gave a talk, which I think kind of said the same thing, which is either you're conscious of it or you're not, but the more things you do and the more things you see and the more things you kind of collect, the more kind of creative you can be. And so I don't know, I think having other interests or even surrounding interests sometimes helps. I'm a big fan of Tenyo tricks, and I collect them. I've got, you can't see it from here, but I've got like a Tenyo shelf of not every Tenyo trick I own, but a whole bunch of them. And I've got a few apps which are actually a little bit inspired by some of those Tenyo tricks. And there's a trick called Spirit in the Coffin by Magic Works, which is a kind of Tenyo related company that make like small electronic magic tricks. One of my recent tricks called Timed Out that I put in my Amalgam series, where there's a bunch of tricks that you get in one app together, is very much inspired by that. It's if you're familiar with that trick and you're familiar with Timed Out, like you'll see how close they are. And so that's probably the one where it's like the closest inspiration, where it's not that in digital form, but like you can see the origins of it are kind of in this toy, essentially. And so I think just kind of, if you've got, like, I've always loved technology and I've loved magic, and I've just always kind of felt there's probably good natural pairings between the two. I've never really sat down and thought, oh, I'm really creative. I just kind of like messing around with things, and sometimes something comes out of it. So if you're ever wanting to kind of create something, maybe just try and do that. Just be, again, cliche, but just, you know, nothing's a bad idea. Just keep trying things and playing around and seeing what works and what doesn't, having opinions on it sometimes help. I sometimes sit there and go, well, you know, I know I don't like this, but I can't really pinpoint why. And if I really try and think about it, I'm like, I think it's because of this. So I've kind of come up with my own internal rules as to what makes good app magic and good bad magic as a result simply of playing around. I feel like I've violated these rules a few times, and it's always when I do that I realize it's a bad trick. I'm not a big fan of certain magic apps for certain reasons. And so having a bit of a structure and a framework seems to help for me. But I think you'll eventually find your own way and understand what it is that you like and what you don't like. And when you figure out what you like, just play around and see what works. I mean, that's what I do. And again, I certainly wouldn't say that I'm a super creative person, but I just like playing with this stuff, and sometimes good stuff comes out of it.
Fantastic. And yeah, I disagree with you, by the way. You are super creative. I mean, just the amount of stuff that you've brought out that's just used by so many people. It's incredible. It really is. And I want to put at the, before we end this interview, I want to put at the bottom of the screen and in the description down below where people can go to see your body of work, because I'm aware of a lot of your apps. I own a lot of your apps, but there's a lot of apps as well that I'm not even maybe aware of. And so is there a website where people can go and look at your combined collections and everything that you've brought out?
Yeah, so if you just go to my full name.com, so markherstein.com, it's got like, there's not incredible descriptions there, but you'll see the products. And if you click on them, it will take you to the app store and tell you what each thing is. And it's not an exhaustive collection of everything, but it's just, I think it's eight of my apps on the app store, which are like my most popular things. So you'll be able to read about them. And if you've got any questions, obviously, anyone's feel free to email me and get in touch, and I can help you out. Yeah, it doesn't include things like Magic Mask and some other stuff, which are kind of peripheral products of mine that are not necessarily apps. But if you're interested in any of my apps, markherstein.com, you'll see it there.
On that subject, actually, Mark, and I was going to end it, but I'm going to ask you one more question because it's just comforting. Sure. What's your thought process on web-based apps as opposed to actual apps? Because we're seeing a lot of web-based apps come out at the moment. Are they, and I've seen two schools of arguments. I've seen one group of people say, oh, web-based apps are terrible. It's just they're lazy and they couldn't be bothered to create a proper app. And other people are saying no, because the stuff you can do with web-based apps that you can't do with normal apps. And, you know, it's too restrictive working with Apple, and there's a lot of hoops you've got to jump through. You've never done a web-based app. Is there a pro and a con to this? Is there a reason why some are apps and some are web-based apps?
Yeah, it's. I mean, you're exactly right in everything you just said, which is there are definitely some pros of having a regular app. There are things that you can't do in a web-based app that you can do in a real app, and vice versa. For example, you can't vibrate the phone, as one example. If you want to have the phone vibrate and buzz in your pocket or do something, a website or something you add to the home screen, which is essentially a website, can't do things like that. They tend not to be as well designed and well managed, and that's just simply normally because Apple have put a lot of work into allowing developers to create really good apps and, you know, giving you the functionality and tools, which, you know, a lot of web-based stuff just unfortunately doesn't quite have, especially on the iPhone, which is Apple's device. So often you're left with a bit of a subpar product, not all the time, but often the product is not as good as a native application when it's web-based. But exactly, just like the perk, the perk from the developer's point of view is you get to keep all of the money. None of it goes to Apple in that case. It might go to other places if you're handling credit card fees or PayPal or whatever else to do the sale. And also you don't have to deal with review. Apple are quite stringent as to what they allow and what they don't allow in the App Store. And sometimes it's a little bit of a black box to not know. You know, you might spend all your effort and all your energy developing something and you submit it to Apple for the review and they just go, sorry, no. And then you've spent all this time, possibly money, developing something just to kind of be, you know, get this brick wall. And so going to a web-based app might be a good idea. There are certainly exceptions to the rule. Ellipse is a really well-designed and well-built app, I think, which is all web-based. And I think once you've installed it, you can easily forget that it's a web-based app. Like in terms of the design that the magician sees, it's really well made.
Ellipse is something that is very clever. When I first saw Ellipse, I was like, isn't this just a copy of the concept with Wikitest? But they've gone in a very different direction.
Yeah, I think there's certainly an argument there for a bit of both. I think it is quite tempting for a lot of apps now to kind of say, I want to do Wikitest, but essentially with a different website. I think the important thing that the developer has to do is add something else to the table to make it different enough and to make it varied. Again, I would normally be tempted to ask if it was borderline close. But yes, it's in terms of the development of the app itself, it's incredibly well made and well put together. I messaged Maxime to tell him that I was really impressed with his work because it's a really well made product. Certainly borrows concepts from Wikitest and of that world, that kind of product. But it's good. And it's a web app, but you'd never know it, I think. So yeah, there are differences. It also depends on what technologies you're comfortable with developing for. And so, you know, if you're good with JavaScript and web-based technologies, then maybe you want to make a website app. But yeah, exactly like you said, there's perks either way. There are certainly some things that you can do with a normal iOS app you can't do with a web app. And then, you know, knowing that you're not going to hit a brick wall at the end of your development process with a web app is obviously a perk of going down that route too.
Absolutely. Is that a danger? Is it a danger of you spend absolutely ages developing an app and then Apple say no for some strange reason?
Yeah. I've had it a few times. I know other people have had it a few times, and it's hard because it's not just the app itself. It's also any updates, any subsequent updates that you put through. So if I've created a product and I want to put it onto the App Store and, you know, Apple say yes, they might say yes. And then they say I do a very minor update. Apple might look at it again and say, actually, we were wrong. And they tend to not like it when you copy their UI. And, you know, if you're making an app that has a calculator, for example, and it looks like the Apple calculator, they might get a little bit upset by that. There are things you can do. You can talk to them about it, which normally doesn't go very well. Certainly, you know, Apple are quite, I think they are on the side of caution. And so they tend to say no to things when it's borderline. I've worked out a few ways that you can sometimes get things on, but with discussions with Apple, like not necessarily hiding things, but I have, for example, apps where you have the user take screenshots of their phone. And so you have them take screenshots. So rather than maybe copying the lock screen, which might be quite useful in an app, I can simply show you this Amped product here like this. If I go that, in my Amalgam series, I have this Amped here, and I have it so that the user can set two screenshots. So you can set a screenshot of your lock screen or control center in this case, and just having those two screenshots mean that you can then simulate the screens that you want to simulate, but the user's doing all the work. So this way, you know, Apple won't be unhappy because I'm not replicating any of their elements. And so as long as you kind of understand what it is that Apple want and don't want you to be doing, I think you can kind of figure out what it is you need to do in order to get the app approved. But sometimes you have to then be creative and seek creative ways of making this stuff work. Yeah, but that is a problem. And it's a worrying problem because you might spend a long time on something to be told, sorry, you can't release this.
Very frustrating, especially there's nothing you can do about it. But
for sure.
Luckily, all of your apps, or at least the ones that I'm aware of, haven't had that problem, which is amazing. And I just want to say, Mark, this has been an incredible interview. I knew it would be, and I've been wanting to get you on here for a while. Our calendars haven't meshed, but now they have. So thank you so much for coming on the channel. I want everybody who's listening this to go and support Mark and buy everything that he's bought. We've also done a review show special on Street. So if you want to find out more about Mark's products and Streets, and you know, we talk about that, go have a look at that review show special. But yeah, I mean, this is amazing. So thank you so much for coming on the channel. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. Really, thank you.
No problem. So is there any social media that people can follow you on? Do you have Instagram or anything like that?
I have Instagram. It's Magic Mark. So Magic and then M-A-R-C. I'm bad at it. I feel like I'm just on the edge of the age where it just doesn't come natural to me anymore. And so I feel like I really have to try it, and I just tend not to. So you can follow me there, and if you want to message me and all that stuff, I'll probably reply. But yeah, don't expect high quality content on my social media. But Magic Mark on most platforms.
There you go. Magic Mark on most platforms. Also, the URL is down below. Go check it out. Go check it out in the description. And you want to find out more about Mark's products, go check out the review show special. Mark, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And I'll see you again.
Thanks, Craig. See you soon.
No problem. Guys, take care. I'll see you.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast. Magic. Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel, Magic TV, which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.